a Kara and the Ramah, and we're going to have the Shach and the Taz and the Chassidim, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, who's going to bench? What are we going to do? Now, obviously, everybody's looking around the room trying to figure out who's going to bench. And then they all come to the realization, hey, Moshe Rabbeinu's here. Of course, he's going to be the one to bench. And all eyes on Moshe Rabbeinu. They all turn to him and they say, okay, Til Baruch, you should be the one to bench Mezumah. Moshe Rabbeinu turns back to him and he says something. He says, I cannot bench. Why? Because as much as I may have accomplished in my life, as much as I may have done, and the levels of Nebuah I've gotten to, there is something that is lacking. There's something that's deficient in the life that I live. How can it be? What's deficient in the life of Moshe Rabbeinu? And the Gemara says, Moshe Rabbeinu himself says, because I never had the schus to go into Eretz Yisrael, lo b'chayi, v'lo b'mosi. I never had the schus to be in Eretz Yisrael when I was alive, or subsequent, after I died, I wasn't even allowed entry into the land of Eretz Yisrael. And because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu feels that there's something lacking in his personality. Now, what does that tell us about Eretz Yisrael? What does that tell us about the greatness of being in Eretz Yisrael, of having the opportunity, and it's such a gift. It's such an opportunity that our generation has to be a part of the life of the dream that our grandparents, our great-grandparents only dreamt of, only thought about. Nobody imagined it would be a reality, but we have the opportunity to be a part of the experience of Eretz Yisrael, either in a larger way, in a small way, to visit or to take in the Kedusha HaSa'aretz. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, don't take that for granted. Understand that that is what made me, Moshe Rabbeinu, deficient in my life, because I didn't have that schus. We look at a comment of the Sefer Charedim when he writes, the Sefer Charedim was written at the same time as Rabbi Yosef Karo. He lived with all the Mekubalim and Svat. And the Sefer Charedim writes, with Sarah Kalish Yisrael, Lechabe Veseret Yisrael. He writes, if you look here on number Aleph, every Jew needs to feel a sense of love, of connection to Eretz Yisrael. Velovo Elam Eafsale Aretz. And we should travel to Eretz Yisrael from all the different places in the world. B'tshuka Gedola. You ever have? Anybody in here as a child and you ever went to a big department store, you went to a mall, and inevitably a child gets lost. It happens. Happens even to the greatest of parents. And then you hear that announcement that you never want to hear. You know, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, we have your child at the security desk, we're looking for you, and you're mortified and whatever, but you got to go, and you're running and you're looking, and the kid is hysterical crying, and you hear them from far away. You hear them screaming, Mommy, Daddy, Abba, Ima, Tati, and you finally see them, and the child comes rushing out to you and starts hugging and embracing and kissing. Writes the Sefer Charedim, Kiven El Chekimo. What is our relationship with Eretz Yisrael supposed to be? It's supposed to be like that child that's standing at the security desk, never knowing if they're going to see the parent again, terrified. And yet they have this warm and loving embrace. They come together. That's the feeling we're supposed to have when we reconnect, when we reunite with Eretz Yisrael as well. And he says, the reason for this is because the problem that Klal Yisrael faced in the beginning of the infant stages of Klal Yisrael was, we had an issue with Eretz Yisrael when we sent them to Raglim and we had an inappropriate reaction, the wrong kind of response. And as a result of that, we are still paying the price. Now, why is it that we want to have the experience of being in Eretz Yisrael? What's it all about? Is it because Eretz Yisrael has such amazing restaurants? Is it because they have such an amazing spa and they have beautiful arrangements for us to enjoy our vacation? Is that what it's all about? So the Gemara asked, why did Moshe Rabbeinu pleading with his life to go into Eretz Yisrael? What's the big deal? So you don't go into Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara asked, "B'nei Manas Avin Moshe." So Gemara in the end, in the beginning of the Masechta Sot, to the first parak, Yud Dalet Manala, for the Gemara says, why was Moshe Rabbeinu so insistent? Why was he so eager to go into Eretz Yisrael? V'chi lechem mipir Yitzarah. Did Moshe Rabbeinu have an insatiable desire? Was he craving to just have the fruits of the land? Is that what it was all about? The RC Cola, right? They don't serve soda that we're drinking here. What did Moshe Rabbeinu want? What was so important about being in Eretz Yisrael? Obviously, it wasn't the food. There's better food in Chutz La'aretz sometimes. So what was the issue? Says the Gemara, at least Balmi Tuva, Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go to the spa. He wanted to go to all the natural resorts, to the springs that they have there. What did he want? And the Gemara says, no. Ha'chomer Moshe Rabbeinu said, Harbe mitzvos estavi Yisrael ve'imiskayim in elav Eretz Yisrael. We have so many mitzvos that can only be performed in Eretz Yisrael. And as much as I may have done in my life, I'm not able to perform the mitzvos of Kachlul Yisrael. And because of that, Moshe Rabbeinu says, I want the schus of going into Eretz Yisrael, that I should be able to have the opportunity of performing mitzvos. And what you see from that is, being in Eretz Yisrael is not about an ideology. It's not about politics. It's about understanding the schus that we have to perform the mitzvot of Tluyas Baaretz. And you see it so clearly in the Chumash. Look at this pasuk together in Sefer Devarim. Ba'atah Yisrael shma l'chukim el ha'mishpatim asher anochi milamed eskam l'asos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu expects of us to follow all the mitzvahs HaTorah. L'man tichyu, in order that you should live. U'basam yirishtam as'aretz, and then you will come into Eretz Yisrael asher Hashem Elokei Avoseichem nosen lachem. The Piskuni writes, again, in the 13th century, the Piskuni, one of the most important Mefarshim on Chumash, writes, what does the Torah mean to say here? And it's clear from the formulation of this pasuk that this is conditional. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you want to have the opportunity, U'basam yirishtam as'aretz, you want to have the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael, to inhabit, to be zocha to the land of Eretz Yisrael. It's all conditional on the first part. Shema el achukim yal mishpatim. Eretz Yisrael is only deserving to the Jewish people if they make sure to remind themselves, Shema el achukim yal mishpatim, that we have to also follow all the mitzvahs of Tluyas Baretz and all the mitzvahs for that matter. And in fact, the Rishonim writes the same idea. Why is it? It's interesting. The second bracha in the Birchas HaMazon, we're all heeding here a Sudas Mitzvah. The second bracha in Birchas HaMazon is Ala Aretz. We thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for Eretz Yisrael. And we thank the Ribbono Shel Olam for Eretz Yisrael. Think about the bracha. No delacha al shel kachalav yisayin. Thank you for giving Eretz Yisrael to our ancestors. Okay, very nice. How does that fit in? What does that have to do with anything? Why is that part of the Shvach of Eretz Yisrael? The answer is right for Yerushalmi, because the greatest place that we can have the opportunity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to perform his mitzvahs is in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, as a part of the thanks that we give the Rebbe Shalom for giving us Eretz Yisrael, we thank him also, Al Tairascha Sheli Madatana, because that is such a critical part of everything that we do. Now, the problem is, for those of us who live in Kutzlaritz, we feel very disconnected. We don't feel that we have a part of those opportunities for mitzvahs of the Luyas Baretz. And the question is, what is there to do about that? We know that Chafetz Chaim went on a rampage in his lifetime to try to encourage people to learn all of the different mesechtas that are relevant to the mitzvahs of the Luyas Baretz. Very interesting. You look in the back of the Gemara, again, for those who just finished the Daf Yomi, I don't know how often when you're learning the Daf, you have the opportunity to look in the back. And even if you're looking in the back, you're probably not learning the Marsha or the Maharam. That's a technical, trying to figure out Shaka Matari, the Gemara, the Sugya, Toysis, and Rashi. Not so simple. But the Marsha and the Maharam and the Maharshal and so many others wrote commentary, wrote Pirushim on every line, Gemara, Rashi, Toysis, everywhere. And yet, all of a sudden, you come to Kachin. There's no Marsha, and there's no Maharam, and there's no Maharshal, there's almost no Rishonim. How could it be? What happened? This was not a focus, and it wasn't until later generations that the Achronim, about 100 years ago, decided this is something we really need to focus our attention on. If we plan at some point to go back to Eretz Yisrael, we're going to have to know the laws of Kachem and Tahara Zeroyim. We're going to have to understand all of this. And if there are not enough Rishonim, at least the Chafetz Chaim then went ahead and wrote a Chelek all about the Mitzvahs HaTluyas Baretz, and he wrote a whole interpretation to all of those Gemaras, all those Masechtas that are about the Mitzvahs of Tluyas Baretz and Tumah Tahara, because the Chafetz Chaim understood, if we're not going to know this, then how are we supposed to be able to have the opportunity of going to Eretz Yisrael? When we get there, what are we going to do? So the Chafetz Chaim gives a beautiful mashal in the introduction to the Sefer on Kachim, and he writes, why is it that I find it's important to dedicate my time to write a Sefer about Mitzvahs of Tluyas Baretz? Why? There's plenty of other things to do. He wrote the Shmiras HaLashon and the Mishneh Berurah. Plenty of other things to be busy with. Writes the Mishneh Berurah. The reason why is because Dinyan HaNisuin. Says, imagine you have a chasana, you have a wedding. When the kala is omedes umukushetes, when the kala is there, and she's all made up in her gown, and she has the jewelry on, and she's all ready to go, and the chasana is just not paying attention. And you wake him up and you say, look, the kala's ready. She's ready to walk down the aisle. Put yourself together. He's going to say, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'm a little absent-minded sometimes. But now I see the kala's ready for me. Of course. How am I going to delay? Writes the Chafetz Chaim. If we show HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we are like that kala that is dressed up, that is ready, that is prepared for this beautiful experience of this reunification of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Klal Yisrael, then how will the Ribbono Shel Olam say no? Chafetz Chaim says, this will be Makar V'Gula. If we prepare ourselves by learning the mitzvahs of Tluyas Baretz, by understanding Zeroyim Kachim HaTaharas, that will be something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot turn us down for. And this is really written about by all the major Sfarim, and something we need to think about. And maybe if we don't think about it during the year so much, at least we have the opportunity during this time of the year to focus our attention just for a few weeks or a few days or maybe a few hours on how central and how vital Eretz Yisrael is to all of us. In the days of the Vilna Gaon, as we know, the end of the 1700s, the Vilna Gaon really went on a crusade to try to get people, his Talmidim, to move to Eretz Yisrael. Now, what's very famous about the Vilna Gaon is, first of all, why did he get this idea? Everybody was living fine. He was in Vilna. What was the need to go to Eretz Yisrael? Why did he feel it was so important? So the Vilna Gaon had some kind of gematria. It says in the Navi Yeshaya, Berachamim Gedolim Makatzei. The Navi Yeshaya writes that with tremendous mercy, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will bring you back to Eretz Yisrael. The Vilna Gaon said, oh, that's the gematria Eliyahu ben Shlomo Zalman. Go work it out at home. And the Vilna Gaon said, oh, obviously it's a remez that Eliyahu ben Shlomo Zalman, that was the name of the Vilna Gaon, it means that I'm supposed to be the one to get people going back to Eretz Yisrael, and that's going to bring the Gulu. Okay, so how the Vilna Gaon came up with this is beyond us, but that's really where it all started. And because of that, he encouraged many, many of his talmidim. Now, it's interesting that the Vilna Gaon, what's the probably one of the most famous things about the life of the Vilna Gaon? What would you say? The story.
The Megillah story.
What was that?
The story of the Megillah.
The one where he didn't have. Where he didn't have what?
It's a story of the Vilna
Gaon. Story of the Vilna Gaon. What would you say? What? Okay, exactly. What would you say about the Vilna Gaon? He didn't write any Svarim. He didn't make it there. He didn't even make it. But even more famous than that, what would you say is probably the most famous thing that we know about the Vilna Gaon today? What? It's fine with the Hasidim. Again, it was a Machlokes L'shem Shamayim. And there's a lot to talk about what happened then. We'll come back another time with some you know, Buster Yain here again for another scene. We'll talk about the Vilna Gaon, the Hasidim. It's beautiful. But that was probably the most famous issue that the Vilna Gaon took upon himself is he was so against the movement of Hasidus at the time, and it was just getting started. The Baal Shem Tov and all of his scholars were just getting started. And that was really something that troubled the Vilna Gaon very much. If you look at the Nefesh HaChaim, who was the greatest Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, or Chaim HaLajner, he also goes on a crusade against the Hasidim. And this was like their life mission, to topple the Hasidus. Now, it was not successful. As we know, Hasidim flourished and Hasidim lived on, and it's still flourishing today. Maybe the whole dynamics are different today. Obviously, Hasidus today is not what it was 150-200 years ago. Everything's different. But he doesn't say, I find it fascinating that although he had this nekuda of machlokes with the Hasidim, and he was obviously l'shem shamayim in his beliefs, but what's fascinating is the two people that got the movement to Eretz Yisrael going were the Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem Tov. Fascinating. The Vilna Gaon and the Baal Shem Tov were the first ones to send people to Eretz Yisrael in the end of the 1700s. The first mission, I believe, went in 1800s, 1808, 1809 or something, they were sent as Talmidim of the Gaon. But they were preceded 20 years earlier or 25 years earlier by the Talmidim of Baal Shem Tov. And they all came together. And this created a major problem because it's not like they came to Eretz Yisrael and there were so many options of where to live. So you have the Talmidei Agra, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Mishlo, was one of the greatest Talmidim of the Gaon. There was a second personality by the name of Rabbi Yisrael Mishlo. He's the author of the, anybody know? Kasa Shulchan. So he wrote a few halakim, Kasa Shulchan, which is all Mitzvah Talmidei Svaritz, because the Vilna Gaon encouraged him to do that. So you have all these Talmidei Agra go to Eretz Yisrael. The problem is, where are they going to go? They need a minion, right? The Ramban already writes in his time, in the Rishonim. The Ramban writes when he went to Eretz Yisrael, he couldn't get a minion in Yerushalayim. The Ramban says he came to Yerushalayim, he couldn't get a minion. He had to lay Monday morning, Thursday morning, couldn't get a minion together. And then he says they scrapped together a couple of people and whatever they got is Shlach HaMai says there was nobody there, they didn't know anything, they don't know how to read Hebrew. This is what it was. What does the Vilna Gaon send this Talmidim to? He says, go to Eretz Yisrael, you'll find a little community there. What community did they find? There's a small community of Hasidim in Tiberia. It's the only place they were. You can't go to the, what are we going to do? We're going to down to the Sakhari, the Sakhari, what are we going to before the Ariza. What are we going to, the Sakhari is around, what are we going to do? We can't be a part of this community. So they have this issue, and they first move in there, and then they realize it's not going to work, they move somewhere else, that's when they move to Tzat. And then they had all the calamities, and it wasn't so simple. But it's an interesting history that it happens to be the Talmidei Baal Shem Tov and the Talmidei Agra are really what established the Yishuv in Eretz Yisrael. It's all because of them. And there were not so many people there. I think the third wave of Talmidei Hagra went. At that time, they say that there were 600 people, 600 Jews who were living there at the time. 600 people, that was the whole yeshiva. Can you imagine? And this was like celebrated. This was the big news that everybody wanted to be a part of this. But 600 people, that was the whole thing. And now you look today, how many thousands and millions of Jews are living in Eretz Yisrael. It's such a miracle, it's such an unbelievable thing. But for those of us living in Chutz Laaretz, we don't have the opportunity to be Mekayim the Mitzvos HaTluyos Baaretz. Let's just think for a few moments, just to familiarize ourselves, so we should know the words at least. I know that we're a chevra of a kolo chevra introduced. Is that what the shul is called, the kolo?
Sure.
So it's a kolo chevra here. They learn, right? It sounds like everybody was making the siyum on the Daf Yomi. So you're all familiar with this. I'm not telling you anything new. But it's important as we go through the Gemara, as we go through the Psukim and Chumash, as our Rabbi said every week, just to understand what are the Mitzvos HaTluyos Baaretz? What are we talking about? What are the words? What are the issues that we have to be aware of? So many of us might be aware, I don't know if you shop in Costco, in the five towns by us, everybody goes to Costco. If they're one immediately located in them. Halavai, you should be Zotha. Pomegranate, we should be Zotha too, but you should all be Zotha to Costco. So they have, Gourmet Glad, I hear that they're going to shoot me. You should just know, don't worry, I'm a proud, power-carrying member of Gourmet Glad also. Okay. Anyway, so the Mitzvot HaTluyos Baaretz that we're familiar with, not just once in a while you get an email. Kasher sends out an email. There's a Trumas and Mises problem. There's some oranges, Jaffa oranges are selling in Costco and Walmart. Got to be careful. A little bit. But we don't really know what's going on. We don't really understand what it's all about. Do you know how many Mitzvot HaTluyos Baaretz there are? Leket, Shikha, Peya, Heret, Ololos. What are these things? Anybody know what these things are? So some of them are when you have Tmua. Then we have Shemitah. So we're all familiar with the concept of Shemitah. But what are the halachas of Shemitah? So complicated, so intricate. It's important for us to know. Maaser Ani. What is Maaser Ani? Every third and sixth year, we're supposed to give, again, we have a seven-year cycle. Seventh year is Shemitah. Machlokes and the Gemara, Machlokes and Rishonim. And how exactly do you count that? Do you do 7, 7, 7, 7, 7? And then you have the 49th year is Yovel. 49th year counts as its own year. Or is that a double year? So do you count 49 and 50 and then you start 7 again? That's a major problem today because now we don't really know when Shemitah is because that issue is not resolved. Right? Everybody understand what I'm saying? If you count 7, 7, 7, 49 and then you count the blank year as 50 and you start all over again, then Shemitah is going to be 1 year. If you just keep counting 7, 7, 7, 7 and keep going and the 49th is Yovel, then Shemitah is going to be a different year. And over time, that's really going to cause a problem. So this is part of the issue of Shemitah Bezman Hazeh. We don't really know what it is. Second problem with Shemitah Bezman Hazeh is that we don't have Rov Yoshveh Aleha. We don't have most of the Klal Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael yet. We're getting close. We're getting pretty close. But most of the Jews in the world do not yet live in Eretz Yisrael. They're saying we're almost at the tipping point. But being that we're not there yet, Shemitah Bezman Hazeh cannot be Deoraisa. That's one of the prerequisites the Gemara says that you need. And we don't yet have that. But Shemitah is an enormous set of halachos. And we have Maaser Ani, as we said, the third and the sixth year out of the seven-year cycles. Maaser Ani means we're supposed to give 10% of all the produce to the Aniyim. We don't have the opportunity to do that. We live in Chutz Laaretz. 1, 2, 4, and 5, right? So we said 3 and 6 is Maaser Ani. 1, 2, 4, and 5 is Maaser Sheni. But we don't have the opportunity to give Maaser Sheni today. We don't have Beis HaMikdash. We don't have Yerushalayim B'Binyanah. We don't have all of these great gifts. Bikurim. We can't bring Bikurim. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. Netzer Revai. Hafrasha Schala, by the way. We're all familiar with Hafrasha Schala, but the truth is, the mitzvah of Hafrasha Schala is B'vo'achem el ha'aretz. It's an Eretz Yisrael. Chala b'zman hazeh and Chutz Laaretz is only derabanan, which is why the Gemara says that because Chala is only derabanan Chutz Laaretz, we have many kulas when it comes to Hafrasha Schala. Things go wrong all the time. You have all kinds of problems. Once I'm on it, I'm just going to take a caveat for a second just to make sure people aren't sleeping. But I remember, Mamish, like the worst disaster story of Chala you'll ever imagine. So we have, we got a call 1 year, Erev Pesach, from somebody who lived in the neighborhood. And he said his wife has this awful minute. What's the minute? It's not her fault. It's what her mother does, her grandmother does. It's a terrible minute. The minute is that when she's not for Shabbat, she puts it into a piece of foil or into a bag or something, and she puts it in the freezer. And Erev Pesach, they take all the challahs from the whole year, all the alfreshes, and they burn it together with the hummus. Sounds nice, right? Sounds nice. Horrible idea. Why? I'll tell you why. Here we are, Erev Pesach. I already did my Sreitas Chametz. We did a Yudika. We're ready to go. And here I am, Erev Pesach. I get a call from this guy. He goes away with his wife to Baltimore for Yantar, his in-laws. And now he's too far away from New York to do anything. He sold his house to a Nachri. And he burnt the little 10 pieces of chametz that he burnt, whatever he brought along with him to Baltimore, everything's good. Then he realizes, oh, we forgot all the pieces of challah. So he asked me, can you go into my house? Because we have this challah. Now, why do I have to go in? He sold the house to the goy. What's the answer? He can't sell it. Why can't he sell it? It doesn't belong to him. You're a mafresh challah. The challah doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the koyin now. Problem is, the koyin is not the tahara of his manazeh, so he can't eat it. So we have the minute to burn the challah today. But the problem is, because you have challah in your reshus, you're going into Pesach, and you are mamish violating by yirah, by yimatzid daraisa, by having this challah in your freezer. Isn't that an amazing story? I see nobody cares for the story, but it's pretty cool. What? You can't sell it. You don't sell the house. Rabbi Kibbeh discusses, do you re-put up your mezuzahs when you come back after Pesach? It's a good shayla. We don't, right? Why not? Because we don't sell the house. We sell the chametz in the house. Do you kasher all your kalim when you come back? Because if you sell the house, then you're selling all the kalim, and that means you're buying from a goy. What? Selling the house? No, here's a given doesn't mean selling a house, not at all. No, I'm just giving you a hard time. But no, it's not at all. Anyway, don't try this at home. Not a good idea. When you have the challah and you're supposed to burn it, you should burn it. In fact, the Chazon Ish writes in one of his Sfarim that maybe there's a prohibition to leave it longer. When you have a din of Sreifas Nosa, right, you're supposed to burn something right away. So the Chazon Ish says, he's not sure. Maybe when it comes to Sreifas Challah, you're also supposed to burn it right away and you don't leave it longer. You don't leave it around. Anyway, bad things can happen when you leave things around. Stamazah in life. When you procrastinate in things, it's never a good thing. So over here also, same thing. You're supposed to do a mitzvah of a precious challah and you're supposed to do the Sreifa. So that's what you do. Anyway, here we are. What? I had to go to another community to get the spare key to his house. I have a face on this that I was busy with. To go get the spare key to his house that somebody else had. I had to go into his house, Erev Pesach after this man, and I had to go and take out all of his afrashas and burn them. Yeah. So, what we do for friends, you know? It's okay.
Yeah, you got a lot of water.
It's not so pasha to get to the ocean, you know?
Really?
Anyway, so there's a fascinating discussion that we need to think about. Yeah. We live in Kutzlar as well, Merino Isa. This scene just gets better and better as we go. I see why everybody's here tonight. They calmed you into the shir. What's coming next? So 1 second. How long should I go? The longer I go, you keep bringing out more forces. I'll see. Okay. So, see, here's the question. You know, we live in Chutz Laaretz. Maybe we do our best to learn the mitzvahs of Chutz Laaretz. Maybe we learn the Daf Yomi, and we don't skip over those Maseches. Maybe we try to learn some of the Sfarim that can teach us about Shemitah. Okay, the Shalom Parm Sabasein is the best we can do. Is there more we can do? So I'm sure everybody's aware. You look in any of the local Jewish newspapers and you're well aware of the fact that they have an ad every year around Shemitah time about having the opportunity of a lifetime. What's the opportunity of a lifetime? We're going to, you know, only for, I don't know, a limited price. What is it these days? I didn't see yet.
1,200.
Are we all 1,200? Oh, the rates went up. Inflation. I don't know. Back in the days, it was up for $100. We're going to give you a piece of land. Can't buy anything for $100 anymore. So we're going to give you a piece of land in Eretz Yisrael, and then it's going to be considered as if you have been mekayim the mitzvah of the Shavsahar and Shabbos Hashem, because now you are a farmer, even though you're living in Flatbush, you're living in Marine Park, but you are a farmer, and as a result of that, you bought a chalek in this farm, and you're not working it, so it's as if you have been mekayim the mitzvah of Shemitah. Does that really work or not? Does that really work or not? What? What are you saying? It's better? Okay, so I'm not here to make anybody feel that. If you already bought into the idea, what? You bought what?
They bought their own farm.
Well, your own farm. So
you're doing... That doesn't work because the materials have to kind of doesn't work with feeding them up with like an extra scrub.
Why?
But you're not allowed to sell land and extra scrub without permission to go to the farm.
So the stamas are there are other problems. Technical issues. Okay, I don't know. We got to figure it out. But let's talk on a halachic level. What?
Good organization. Give them money. I'm not taking away.
Yeah. So I'm not singling anybody out. I just want to talk about the dynamics of this and whether or not it's actually halachically Am I accomplishing anything by doing such a thing? So it's an interesting question. And it really comes down to a very important Gemara Maseches Nazir. I don't know where I am anymore on this sheet, but the Gemara Maseches Nazir writes a fascinating statement where the Gemara says, nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael at all, nothing to do with this topic. But the Gemara says, Kol milsa de'i lo matzi yamid, anything that I am unable to do, shliach lo matzi mashi. I cannot make a shliach to do in my place either. So for example, the Gemara gives an example. What would happen if you have a Kiddushin Ayde Shliach? Now, the whole idea of Kiddushin Ayde Shliach is so strange. Imagine a chassan doesn't show up to his own chassan. And he says, okay, you know, I love this woman very much. I really want to marry her. But, I'm doing something else. I'm in Hawaii for the week. So let somebody else go and be the kaddish. It's a strange thing to do. But the Gemara seems to say that this used to happen all the time. That they used to have Kiddushin Ayde Shliach. Why they did it that way, I don't know. But that's what they used to do every once in a while. And the Gemara says what happens as follows. A guy knows that he's going on a trip, so he decides to be Memana Shliach. What is the Shlichus? He says, I want you to be Mekadesh, this woman on my back. Okay, that works. The Gemara says it works. We have a concept of Shlichus. Where do we learn Shlichus from? What's the original? What? The Gemara says the Kiddushim we learn Shlichus from Kein Tarimu Gamatem, right? I think it's from Shulma. Yes, so we're chazering the Daf. It's good. We're almost up to it again. So it's important that we understand Shlichus is obviously something that works, and it works by all halakhic criteria. And yet, here you have a man who's Memana Shliach. He asked this friend of his to go be Mekadosh and Isha. Okay, that should work. Problem is, one small problem. What's the problem? She happens to currently be married to someone else. So what do you say? Small problem, big problem, serious problem, right? So what are you going to do? Obviously, he's not able to marry the woman now. She's married to somebody else. He obviously has plans that this woman is going to either get divorced or somehow her husband is not going to be here any longer, and he's going to have the opportunity to marry her. But he's afraid that if that happens, he's not going to be in town. He knows he's going on a business trip for a month, and he knows that whenever this husband is out of the picture, someone is going to get this woman, and he wants to be the one. So what does he do? Stuck. So he's been mana shliach. He asks his friend, if this woman becomes available, I hereby appoint you to be mekadosh her on my behalf. Does that work or not?
No.
All those who say yes, raise your hands.
No.
Why not? Why shouldn't it work? It's not ba'olam. So the Gemara says the reason why it doesn't work is because right now, would I be able to do that? No, I can't be mekadosh her. She's married. Right? Kiddushin means that I have exclusivity to you and you don't have the ability to go to somebody else. So she is taken up, so to speak. She can't accept the kiddushin from somebody else. She already agreed to a kiddushin of one person. So right now, if he himself were to go to the woman and present himself and say, you know, I really want to marry you, she would say, I'm sorry, but I'm taken. I'd love to be married to you also. I can't. So since he can't do it, the Gemara says, he also can't be Memana Shliach to do it for him. Kol milsa de'i lo matzi yamid, if I myself am not able to do something, I can't be Memana Shliach in my place to do it either. Now, how far does that concept go? The Dagon Rebava, anybody knows who wrote the Dagon Rebava? On the side of the Shulchan Aruch. Rebbe Yehuda wrote the Dagon Rebava, which is basically comments here and there on the Shulchan Aruch, on the side of the page. Dagon Rebava is a fascinating suffix in Yeridei Nefes Pidin Aben, where he wonders the following. A father has a young child who was just born. The child is, let's say, 8 days old. We just did the Bris Mila, and now the father has to go on a business trip. It was planned months in advance. He has to go away. The problem is he has to do a Pidin Aben on his son, a young Lamed Aleph. When do we do a Pidin Aben? What? We do it on young Lamed Aleph. By the way, we do it on the 31st days after the child is 30 days old. Common mistake. I've been to more than one Pidin Aben where they got the wrong date. So you gotta check before you arrange for a Pidin Aben. You have to make sure, get your money back. But anyway, so what happens? This father knows that he's going to be away on the Yom Ramadan. He knows he's going to be away on the Yom Ramadan. But he would love to do the next Pidin Aben. So what does he do? He has a chiyuv to be chodesh and stuff. So he goes to his next door neighbor and he says, listen, unfortunately, I'm going to be away at the Yom Lamed Aleph. I won't be able to do the Pidin Aben on my own. But I would love if you would step in my place. I'm going to give you the money now. And I want you to be my shliach. Does that work? Let's say he was home on Yom Ramadan. And he's not in the mood to go to the Pinyan Aben. He's not feeling well, whatever. Would he be able to send somebody else to do it?
No.
Why not?
Right now, you have to do the.
No, so one second. Let's say he was home on Yom Ramadan. And he wakes up, he's not feeling well, he can't make it. So he asks the next door neighbor, can you go instead of me? Would that work?
Who's the mitzvah?
Good question. Yeah, we're going to talk about it. Certainly now, when the child is only 30 days old, he can't do it himself. So the chiyuv is certainly on the father now. Correct.
The father never did it. He can't come to father down. Does he have to do the...
Of course he has to, yeah. It's a shot that we have with Bali Tshuva, actually, every so often. That it never dawns on them that they have to do a Pinyan Aven. But later on in life, they do. If they have the criteria for a Pinyan Aven, they have to be aware. Now, once we're talking about Bali Tshuva, all the Torah is connected. It all makes sense. So when you're talking about Bali Tshuva, there are other considerations that are spoken about. Rav Avadia has a number of Tshuvas about this in the Gabia Amri at Chavidas, where he talks about the issue of a Pinyan Aven can only be done when it's Peter Rechem Imo. The problem is sometimes when somebody went through a process of becoming a Baal Tshuva, their past was a little bit complicated and things may have happened. And maybe there was a child or a pregnancy along the way that was terminated that we need to know about. And the question is then, how do we deal with that? So sometimes you have the most committed and sensitive and amazing Bali Tshuva who come to the community and they're so excited they have a baby, they want to make a Pinyan Aven. Somebody needs to ask the unfortunate and uncomfortable question, like, is this the first child that has come through this, that has come through this mother? That's a very interesting shot that Rav Avadia discusses, and how far do we need to go? Does somebody actually need to ask that question? Or what if the woman herself knows and never shared it with her husband? She had a relationship in college, she was pregnant, and she didn't want to tell her husband. By the time she met her husband, she was a Baal Tshuva, she's totally committed, totally firm, she doesn't want to talk about it. Does she have to now disclose that information, kill the whole Shalom Bayis? He's going to hear about it and say, the Mekach Toz, I never wanted to marry a woman who was involved in such things, I don't want to be involved in such a thing myself. How far do we go with that? Anyway, interesting story, but the Dagmar Rava, coming back to where we're up to, Dagmar Rava writes, if on the Yom Lamed Aleph, the father is here, and he has the ability to do the thing that then he's just not feeling well, of course he can make a shliach like anything else. Why is that different than making a shliach to be Mekadesh Anisha? It's the same thing. However, if now on day 8, the father is going out of town, and he doesn't want to miss the opportunity, so he goes and he's Mamana a shliach on day 8, that when day 31 comes around, he wants him to do the thing that then for him, doesn't work. Why? Because I myself wouldn't be able to do it now. Right now, it's premature. I can't do a Pinyan Aven on Yom Shmini. I have to do Pinyan Aven on Yom Lamed Aleph. And therefore, since I myself wouldn't be able to do it, how can I be Mamana Shliach to do it for me? So that's what the Dagmar Rava discusses. What would you say in that case? And how far do we take this halacha of anything that he is unable to do, maybe a Shliach is not able to do either? There's a fascinating tshuva in the mid 1400s, the Maori Bruna, one of the great Gedolim at the time, had an interesting shayla. He said every so often, they used to sell the kibbutzim in the shul. So we come up with gimmicks. So they came up with gimmicks back in those. So they said, they got up once a year. They said, we're going to sell the schus to do whatever it is for the whole year. So somebody bought the schus to do hakmat lila for a whole year. All right, it's a big schus. How much did he pay for it? I don't know, but he paid. And it was either that he was going to take the schus, or he can't do hakmat lila himself. So he was going to either take it himself or give it to somebody else in the shul, whoever he wanted to. Should you buy that?
He buys it every year.
Only once a year?
He buys it every year.
Really? For the whole year? So this is already the Maori Bruna. So this shah doesn't get to you. So the Maori Bruna has an interesting suffix. So he says, what happens? The guy is coming to shul every Monday, Thursday, Shabbos, Mincha, everything. He's there, he's doing his Hagbub Lila. Either himself or he's giving it out to someone else. Then, unfortunately, this is not a gift to you. Unfortunately, something happens.
He started giving it up.
The case of Ari Buddha says that the guy ends up in the hospital. He can't come to shul anymore. Your case is much better. He started giving it up. I'm sure he can't come to shul. He's dabbing somewhere else. But he still bought the schus. So is he now able to say that, look, it's my schus, I happen not to be here, so let me hand it off to somebody else. They're not going to have to pay for it. It's my schus, I bought it already. But maybe I should be able to give it to someone else. So the Maribuna has a suffix, maybe we should say this principle goes that far as well, this Kalam Gemara. Since he's not able to do it physically because technically he's not here, is that also part of this Gemara? Is that what the Gemara means, or does the Gemara mean no? If on a halakhic level he's unable to do it, so then he can't give it over to someone else. For example, you ask a shliach to be mekadesh an isha who's married, so that doesn't work because I can't do it halakhically, so therefore the shliach can't be mamuna either. But over here, it's just on technical grounds. He happens to be in the hospital, or he happens to give the daf yomi shir somewhere else. So technically, he's not here. He's not able to give the schus to himself or to somebody else, but maybe that shouldn't stop him. So that's a big suffering the Achronim, which is very relevant to this. Why do I mention it? Because in the 1700s, the Yonos and Heimishitz was the undisputed Gadol HaDor at the time. And he wrote also a very important pirush on Shulchan Aruch, and the Plesi, he discusses this issue. Yonos and Heimishitz was the Rav in Altoona, Hamburg, Prague, right? He was the chief rabbi of all these major cities all together. So he was recognized by everyone. Rav Yonos and Heimishitz writes in the Plesi, it was an interesting minhag in his days. Let's read it together. Number Yud here. In his day, they had a couple of Jews who used to travel to Eretz Yisrael. And he says there were great, pious individuals, Hasidim Anshei Maisa, who lived in Prague and Hamburg. And they had this minhag that they used to send money along with the people traveling to Eretz Yisrael to participate in the mitzvah of Zerah L'Chayayim V'Akeva to a Kohen on their behalf. What in the world does that mean? What does that mean? It's not a carbon issue. When you slaughter an animal, you're supposed to give parts of the animal to a Kohen. The problem with the statement number one is, the Gemara says the favorites that this is not from the mitzvahs of Luis Laritz. It's the same chiyuv we have in Chutz Laritz that they have in Eretz Yisrael. So what does this mean? Yonos and Abishitz writes, people used to send money to Eretz Yisrael to have the schus to do it in Eretz Yisrael. What does that have to do with Eretz Yisrael? You can do it here. So that's a technical issue. What is this all about? But be that as it may, Yonos and Abishitz wonders, does that actually work? I'm not there. Does it help when I send money that somebody in Eretz Yisrael should do something on my behalf if I'm not even there? Maybe that comes back to this Kalam Gemara. If I myself am not able to do it because technically I'm not there, maybe that should preclude me from making a shliach to do it on my behalf as well. And that's the question that he asks himself. And he ends off and he says, Ani ha'isi misupak imahani. And he says, I'm not sure if that really works for the reason that we just described. So how do we paskin halacha l'mais? What's the din? So the Chai Adam wrote a sefer also about the mitzvah tzluyos ba'aretz. It's called the Chachmas Adam. And in the Chachmas Adam, he discusses this issue and he says that he doesn't think it's a problem. Those who live in Chutz La'aretz and want to participate in the mitzvah tzluyos ba'aretz should send money. And why can't you have someone in Eretz Yisrael do it on your behalf? It makes sense. Why not? You're going to say, if I can't do it myself, so nobody else should do it on my behalf either. The answer is no. This is just a technicality. I could jump on a plane and get there. There's nothing really holding me back. It's not similar to the case of a woman who's married, who I'm a mother, shliach to be mekadesh. That's not the same at all. That's on halachic grounds you can't do it. Over here, we're talking about technicalities in the way. As long as you get the technicality out of the way, it's not a problem at all. So this is a very interesting sugya, and it's not simple at all. I remember two shmitas ago, I asked Rav Asher Weiss the first time that I saw all of these ads, and I was intrigued by them. I asked him, does this actually work? I knew nothing about this whole background of the sugya. I just said, that sounds strange to me. I could live in America, living in the comfort of my own home here, running my business, doing everything, having no amun and bitachon at all. The whole point of Shemitah, no, I don't mean that. I'm just saying the whole point of Shemitah is I should give up on my business. I'm going to take a year off to learn. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of me. Well, that's like, you know, that's a big deal. The Gemara says that person is, you know, Gibari Payach, we refer to them. The Pesukim say, that farmer was willing to do that. It's amazing. The amuna, the bitachon that they have. And yet, here I am. I can live in America. I can have a full-time job on Wall Street. I can be making $1 million a year or more. And everything's fine. Everything's great. My kids are all set up and everything's going perfectly. And I bought a little land for $100 an hour to show. Oh, you know, look at me. I'm a Shemitah observer. I'm a farmer. Come on, that's not what it means. Is that really what Shemitah is about? So I thought it was strange. And at the time, he wrote a letter that he has subsequently printed many times over, but he wrote a letter in response to this question. Does that really work or not? And he gives an opinion about the halachic aspect of it, but I think more important than the halacha is the hashkafa of it. So if you want to look together in the second paragraph where he says, Amnam, afim namar diyesh mitzvah, even if you want to get around all the halachic pitfalls and figure out whether or not this is right or wrong, whether we can do it, or like Rabbi Bergman said, maybe it's an issue of dinin de malchusa and the kinyanim, you have a lot of problems that you have to overcome to really do this right. But even if we get over all of that, and even if we figure out how to do it properly with the kinyanim, dinin de malchusa, and all the other technical halachic issues that we could potentially face, still, the etzem, heyos lo karka beretz Yisrael shehu mashbis, mikol makom kvar amru chachamim hakol lefi rov ha-maisa v'rachmana liba boi, bizmaneinu, kulam rodfim achar mitzvos kalos. We are so excited by quick fixes. You know, I think the most common shot I get during the year is like, I just came back, it was so cute, there were two little boys who were collecting money here for Camp Simcha. Are they still here?
Yeah.
Amazing. Where are they? I'm the Rabbi Camp Simcha. I just came home on Thursday. So I commend their work that they're doing, and it's amazing. But you know, I always find it fascinating. Here we are in Camp Simcha. We have serious, like, Shilas Hamura's life and death, till Shabbos for Cholim and Nachilo, but whatever. You got to figure out how to really run an operation like this with 120 campers and 400 staff members all trying to keep Shabbos in a way that they never kept it before. It's not so simple. And like the most common question that I get every summer is like, I signed up to say nishmas for this chol and for that one. So like, does it count if I do it twice, if I do it once and this and that? I'm like, you know, if only this is what we were busy with worrying on this campus. But we're so into the quick fixes and the 40 days of this thing and the 30 days of that thing. And I'm going to do the afrasha schala together. It's going to be a schus for the other one. This one, I'm not making light of it. Maybe it works. Maybe it doesn't. I have no idea. You talk to your local mukubal. And they'll explain it all to you. But be it as it may, I think the point that he makes here is bizmanenu, kulam rodfim achar mitzvos kalos. Everybody wants the quick fix. Why? Because it feels good. I say nishmas 40 days in a row. Yes, the person's going to have a child. Really? I always wondered, do you think the Ribbono Shel Olam is that petty? Do you think the reason why this person doesn't have a child for the 15 years that they're married is because you didn't say nishmas for 40 days in a row? I don't know. It's hard for me to believe. Hard for me to imagine such a thing. Now again, what is a schus in Shemaim and what's not? I don't know. Everything is a schus for all of us. What?
Why sit there?
Well, of course. So we daven. Obviously, we daven and we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps us. But when we get fixated on these things and we believe that this is it, and this is the only thing, you know, I'll give you another example. Last week, I had a therapist in our neighborhood who called me and said, I have a problem. Can you speak to this couple? I said, what's the problem? So the couple doesn't have kids already, 7 or 8 years. It's a terrible tzara. When somebody goes through that, shalom da, you shouldn't have to live through such a thing, but many people suffer and struggle with infertility. And this therapist said that she's helping the wife just psychologically, the trauma that she's going through and the embarrassment and the shame, and it's very, very difficult for her. But so I said, so where are they holding? So she said, the husband refuses to go for any treatment. Why do you refuse to go for treatment? Because I believe in our Kaddish Baruch Hu. If the Ribbono Shel Olam wants me to have children, he'll give me children. So why should I go for any intervention? It's terrible. It's not what we believe in. It's not what the Rishonim say. It's not what the Gemara says. It's not anything. That's not what a Baal B'Tachon does. It's not the way it works at all. I have to say, a lanceman from Camp Simcha. Nice to see you. So anyway, so here we get fixated. I'm not saying tefillah doesn't work. I'm not saying Tehillim and Nishma. Of course these things help. Everything's a schus. Everything should be a schus for us. I remember when I was first married. What time do we do? Not 14. When I was first married, you know, my wife's uncles and aunts live in Borough Park. They're real Hasidim. Bells are Hasidim. So I know, it's funny. So about a month after, whatever, not a month, a couple of months after we got married, one of them was making a bris, and they had called and asked if we would be the kvater. So, you know, everybody knows it's supposed to be a kvater and a bris. So I was very intrigued. You know, it was the first time after we got married that I was asked to be a kvater. I'm like, okay. I asked them, what time is davening? Oh, you know, Sidush is mame, it starts late. I had Seder. I'm like, what am I going to do? Anyway, I asked my father, what am I supposed to do? So my father said, you should stay in yeshiva. You should stay in yeshiva, you learn. I said to him, you know, don't you know, they say that it's a schus for somebody to have children if you serve as a kvater. So he said, whatever schusim you get for being the kvater, you get the same schusim for sitting here and learning the Beis Medrash. It's okay. It's a real good talk. So he said, you know, it's okay, you'll get the same exclusive. Okay, fine. And that I'm not listening to my father because I was like, you know, we just got married, my in-laws want us to go, my wife wanted to go, whatever it was. So we ended up going, and I was happy I went. And Lamaisa, 9 months to the day from that bris, was the due date of our first child. So I was really excited when we were ready to tell my parents that we were expecting. I was excited to not only tell them we were expecting, I was excited to add the caveat. It was 9 months to the day. I had tremendous covet for my father, don't misunderstand. But, you know, I was excited to let him know that, you know, a little egg in his face, that, you know, I'm just letting you know this is 9 months to the day of the bris that you told me not to go to. So I went to my father. I said, by the way, you know, we're expecting. He started crying. He was all excited, whatever. And I said, I just want to let you know that it's 9 months to the day from that bris that you told me not to go to. He did not flinch. He said, okay. So I'm like, you know, he said, I told you. Had you stayed in yeshiva, you would have the same thing. Wexler, like, what are you so nispoiled about? So, again, we never know what's a schus for us and what's not. But over here, the point is that we're so into the quick, it didn't even dawn on me for a second, the schus of Talmud Torah is going to be the same as the Tatar on a bris. And we don't think about it that way. But of course, it's the same. It's much harder to sit and learn a first Seder than it is to go be a Tatar at a bris. But it's much more exciting to go be the Kvater at a bris and assume that I can wash my hands and just say, you know, this is it and it's good. And we forget, the Shochuchim, he writes, we forget, ki ikar shleimus ha'adam. How are we supposed to live life? What gives us shleimus in life? And how do we connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's ba'avodas avoda. It's by overcoming challenges. Ba'avodas nasa, amida b'nesiyonas ha'chayim. It's overcoming the challenges and impediments and facing the difficulty. And then having the fortitude and the strength to be the strong people who we are, that's what gives us shleimus in life. And that's really what gives us the complete composite whole that we're supposed to be. So whether or not technically you're going to buy a land in Eretz Yisrael and you're going to actually participate in the mitzvah or not, it's the one thing, it's a whole discussion. However, think about what is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from Shita? What is the bigger picture here? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I want to see a person who's willing to give up on everything, throw it all in and say, I'm willing to be a Baal Bitach. How many people are willing to do that? And say, I'm going to take off an entire year. I have no idea where it's going to lead me. And yet, I'm willing to do it in full and complete faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu that it's going to work out. That's what Shemitah is all about. Rachman Aliba Boy. Don't convince yourself that you're the one who's doing the real thing. The farmer in Eretz Yisrael, he's the one who should be supported. Send your $100 to him that he should have an easier time this year. Because he's the one who's really sacrificing. He's the one who's really doing. So again, we spoke about a little bit the technicality of the halacha, whether or not it works or it doesn't work, which is an interesting discussion. But just in general, in terms of the hashkafa overall, it's just an interesting thing to be aware of, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always wants our heart and our soul. The Ribbono Shel Olam wants our involvement in mitzvahs wholeheartedly, and not just taking the quick way out, I'll write a check and I'll just say, yeah, part of Shemitah, that's good, I'm participating. There's something so much bigger to the Torah mitzvahs that we observe. There's something so much bigger to the whole context of what the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu represents and what it's all about. And this is an opportunity for us when it comes to Shemitah to reimagine what life living in Eretz Yisrael would be all about. We see ads every day, and don't get distracted by that. The ad should be there to remind all of us, look what a gift it would be if we lived in Eretz Yisrael next year, halavai, sheyibana b'mehera v'yameinu, we should have the opportunity to live in Eretz Yisrael, to experience what it would mean, b'shavsal Eretz, an entire land, an entire community, a whole country, coming together, taking a year off for Liman HaTorah, to come together, to just trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu together, and have the experience that would be so elevating and uplifting for all of us. It's an opportunity for us to remind us of that. Once again, I thank you, Rav Moshe Dov, for the opportunity here. Mazel tov to all the Messiahim. Shibizarcha lahagdil Torah lahadira, lahaskel masechtos yisvar macherim ulasaimam, lilmod ulalamed, lishma relasos ulakayim, es kol divir Torah, so it's mazel tov, everybody.